Hello and welcome back to the Holtcast. We're finally back for another episode. It's good to be here. And of course, if you haven't noticed yet, it's a different voice leading the charge right now. Of course, it's Cole Pettum at TalkAstonVilla on Twitter. Our good buddy James Rushton, of course, has moved on to pastures new, but don't fret too much. We'll get him on in the future as a guest. And of course, we love James's input. So that'll be something we'll try to get on in the future. But of course, I have my other main man here, Danny Raza. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I mean, great that you touch on, you know, obviously James, it won't be the last we've heard from him, and just want to say big congratulations to him. He's got an amazing opportunity now, and yeah, I think he deserves it. Done some great things with the Holtcast, and I'm sure the listeners look forward to hearing from him next and seeing how he gets on. But Cole, great to be with you now. I'm not feeling too happy about the way Villa have been playing, but hey, it's the Holtcast and we're back. It feels like an age since we've talked.
Oh, absolutely. And we do apologize for the little delay in getting these podcasts out. The Christmas season, as many people probably know and understand, it's a busy time for most families and you want to spend it with families and friends. And of course, schedules don't always essentially line up, but we're back for another one. We're gonna review Norwich. Sorry, I have a head cold, so if I don't make sense today, that's why. I'm gonna blame it on that. So we're gonna look at the Norwich game, we're gonna look at the Watford game, and of course we're gonna do a little preview for the Burnley and the Fulham Cup game as well. So there's a lot of jam-packed action in this podcast. I'm stumbling with my words, Danny. Would you mind taking it away?
Yeah, it's a lot of fixtures. January is going to be crazy for Villa. And obviously, as you say, it's just very, very jam packed. Now, that obviously meant that we've had issues in terms of rotation and injury problems as well, which have popped up in the last few games as well for Villa. So the first game obviously was the Norwich game. Villa won that 1-0 coming off the back of a bad defeat, or I think a defeat which really was quite winding against Southampton, against a relegation rival, a win over Norwich, which really did seem quite vital, that down to a goal from Conor Hourihan, but then obviously we had the game against Watford straight after, which was just as deflating. But I mean, let's start on Norwich. I think it wasn't the best of performances, but at the very least, it was nice to see Villa grind out a result.
Oh, 100%. I think it's fair to say, Danny, that luck was well and truly on our side for this game. Norwich came at us, and I think we have to give them a lot of respect and props as well. They came with a game plan, and although they didn't execute it to their likeness, we somehow came away with it. It's kind of surprising, to be honest, because we could have easily lost this, like 3-0, 3-1. It's just the way things were going. And I think the main thing I want to start off with here is our main man in goal, Tom Heaton. The man cost us, what, £10 million? Mm. And I kind of went on and on about him. He clearly saved the day.
No, he did. He did. He was probably the man of the match for that game. There were many opportunities that Norwich had where they could, you know, they really did have us at the ropes a couple of times. I think they had far more possession than us, and it seemed at times like, you know, they were constantly getting opportunities, particularly in the first half. I think that was the scariest time, really. We again just didn't really seem to start off very well, and Heaton had to save us, you know, very often in that game. I think he made 5 saves during the whole game as well, which is pretty strong.
Oh, absolutely. And if we kind of go over those briefly, the first big opportunity came Norwich's way, obviously, from a cross. Sam Byram heads it almost kind of clumsily off the ground and it goes off the bar. There's another instance where luck is on our side, I guess, the first one, of course. And then right after that, we didn't start the game the best, but there was a few exchanges of chances there. The next one coming from Matty Target, he knocks it in from the left-hand side. And Elghazi just swings at it and splices it past the right-hand side of the post. So you're looking at that, you're thinking some even chances here. But after that, it was really all Norwich, Danny. Like, going from that standpoint, how did you feel at that moment? Did you think we could get anything out of the game?
No, I thought it was Groundhog Day again. Like, I think we lined up in that game looking very similar to how we had done in recent weeks. I think, as you say as well, there was the opportunity from El Ghazi, which was, you know, followed up by Douglas Luiz having to make a goal line clearance. And it just, again, it just seemed as though Norwich were going to grab something. It was a here we go again kind of thing. But having said that, you know, the defense were fairly solid throughout. I think Courtney Hawes has done a very good job stepping in and having to jump in there with very little experience. But again, as you say, like Norwich had too much of the ball, and they're not the kind of team that does that. And I think what worried me was the fact that earlier on in the season, we thumped them 5-1. What's changed since then? Why are we now on the back foot against this side who we put 5 past the last time we met them? It just seemed again as though, yeah, I think the one positive thing was Grealish going into the centre of the park. But other than that, it just didn't seem like things were going to change very often. And El Ghazi was having a very poor game as well at that point.
Yeah, I think the thing that annoys me mainly about that, obviously McGinn was injured in the Southampton game, I believe. And it was kind of a forced thing where Grealish clearly and obviously had to go back into the middle of the pitch. And it almost makes me wonder if McGinn wasn't injured, would that have happened? And it was something that had to happen either way. And kind of touching on your point about going into this Norwich game, we thrashed them when we went to Carroll Road. And if you look at things aren't haven't went well for them, and things haven't been going well for us. And at that point, I think we were on a little bit of a shaky kind of upturn. It was very inconsistent, but we were still picking up a few points here and there, and Norwich were clearly struggling, and we capitalized at that point. And this time, and I think this is the biggest issue this season, we're always playing on the back foot, and it's almost like we want to go behind from behind and get something out of the game that way. And especially in the Premier League, you might be able to get away with that in the Championship and some other leagues, but in the Premier League, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get punished. And I don't know if you factor that down to Dean Smith, if you factor that down to the mentality on the pitch, the leadership on the pitch. Like, Danny, where is it in this squad that we have to hone in on that something has to change? Because we'll touch on the Watford game here shortly, but it's the same thing every single game. Even when we somehow surprisingly change formations against Watford, it just things seem stale. And really, where do we hone in on this change?
So I think I'll get more into it when we talk about Watford, but I think there's two things you can put this down to. And the first thing is tactical stubbornness by Dean Smith. He believes in his system. It's not necessarily a bad thing that he believes in the system. And he wants it to work. He wants it to come together. He wants us to, you know, sort of like Barcelona made the 4-3-3 their identity. He wants this to be Villa's identity. He wants us to play in a particular way. But it almost seems as though he won't change anything. He won't change anything if it means going out of that. That's one thing. So teams can see how we set up and they can play to our weaknesses. And we don't seem to change that. I think the second thing is, well, are the players not, you know, are the players not playing as well as they could be? At first, I thought perhaps it's just that they've been figured out. But there's been times in the last couple of games where players have been falling asleep and just sort of looking as though they're lacking fight. Again, more on that one when we get into Watford. I think in the Norwich game, I think the only difference between that one and the Southampton game is that perhaps we were a little bit more focused defensively. I think Grealish coming through the centre meant that we had a couple more opportunities than we would have usually done. And I think the third thing, the main thing for Norwich really was the fact that they haven't got an in-form striker. Pukki hasn't really been scoring recently, whereas Southampton had with Ings.
Yeah, that's fair too. We won't really touch on the Southampton game much. We didn't review it before because of the holidays, but it's kind of passed. It wasn't a great result. But getting back onto the Norwich game here, it's another one where as soon as you hit the second half, you're thinking, okay, first half, not the greatest, a few chances back and forth, but Norwich clearly with ball possession and mainly every other stat dominating. You go into the second half, you're thinking, okay, is this going to be typical Villa? Is this going to be a slow start, kind of a clumsy start almost, and it's kind of more of the same. We pick it up a little bit, and then really out of nowhere, you have Super Jackie Grealish doing a nice little 1-2 with, I think it was Target, gets it right back, and then of course him feeding her a hand right in the middle of the goalkeeper box there, and he slices it home with that wand of a left foot, and it's 1-0. And personally, Danny, I'm thinking, how the heck are we 1-0 up? We really don't deserve this. What were your thoughts on the goal?
You see, at this point, and this is where Villa, you know, need to improve, really. At this point, Villa have 4 men in the penalty area. In fact, no, they have about 6 men in the penalty area, if you want to include Harahan, who's outside the box. It means that Norwich have to work defensively. It means that Norwich have to work, force them to work. You know, give the other team something to worry about. That's why we end up scoring. You know, you take that in comparison to the way that we've been trying to score goals recently, where it's let's, you know, overwork the wingers and hope that, you know, we manage to find a way through. You know, with Wesley having to work to get deeper and draw out defenders. This is what we should have been doing to start with. You see Target get forward. You see Harahan get forward. Villa are on the ascendancy at this point, and that's why they managed to get the goal, and that's how we should be playing at home. However, for many moments throughout that game, it seemed as though we were penned back, and you can't be doing that at home. So good finish from Harahan, and I think it was just a demonstration of what Villa can do.
Oh, absolutely. And then from there, of course, we're holding on for dear life. And I think any Villa fan knows, and even any generalist fan would know, that when Villa sit back, typically bad things happen. If you want to look at the Liverpool game in particular, there's a perfect example of why sitting back isn't always the best thing. And parking that bus sometimes is actually in reverse, and it doesn't help to really make any sense. But with that being said, we're holding on for dear life. We're getting to the end of this game, and another instance, and I think this is a main theme for this one, how many set pieces there were in this game, crosses in the box, just general movements of play in the box. And I think when I'm looking at this, Danny, it's another instance of how poor our man marking is on set pieces. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, again, this just shows we've got inexperience in defense.
Yeah.
Mings came in. He was our big signing. He was the guy that was going to, who was going to sort that out. But Hawes and Konza, who obviously are defending in the Norwich game, they're not experienced in the Premier League. They're not at all. And I think that's, you know, part of the issue. I think secondly, just in general, when you're inviting that kind of pressure, you're going to end up conceding. Norwich had 8 corners or something like that throughout the game. I don't think it's necessary that we're bad at defending set pieces. I think it's just, again, it's an issue of inviting so much pressure that eventually you break. That's probably what I have to say about that. But in the Norwich game, thanks to Tom Heaton, thankfully we managed to keep that clean sheet. And he's my man of the match by far.
Oh, 100%. When I look at that, like the last chance of the game that was really worthy of pointing out was, I think it was Onel Hernandez for Norwich, of course, right in the box. Had loads of time to hit it, and it's literally a perfect save by Heaton that keeps us in it. And I said this earlier, a lot of people in the summer questioned the signing of Tom Heaton and thinking, okay, we should get him for next to nothing. A lot of people thought 10 million was too much. I have to admit, I was one of them for a little bit. But when you look at that as well, he literally saved us points in this match, and that's why he was bought. He's a leader on and off the pitch, clearly. His teammates respect him. Honestly, he's been our best keeper for, I honestly don't know how long. Probably, I'd say he's better than Guzan by a country mile.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think let's just hope we keep him on for at least like 5 or 6. We can see him here long term, hopefully. I think he definitely suits that argument that people are making that Villa should have concentrated on getting more Premier League experience. I'm not saying I agree with that in terms of the players we've signed, but he definitely fits that mold and suits that argument as well. But yeah, that's probably what I'd say. Should we do match balls for Norwich, Cole?
Yeah, let's get on to it. What's your match ball, Danny?
I think it's pretty obvious for me, man. It's obvious, isn't it? It's Tom Heaton. I'm sorry to checkmate you there.
That's okay there. I'm going with Tom Heaton as well. It's definitely a fair assessment. And like I said before, he kept us in this. If not, it could have been 1 point. And you know what? Without him, it could have been zero, really. He's the man that kept us in. There's really nothing more to say about that. I thought Grealish had a pretty good game and, of course, sets up the game winner. And, of course, you could give it to her hand as well for that match winner. But I think it all stems down to Tom Heaton in that one.
I think you can also give it to Courtney Hawes, by the way. I thought he did incredibly by coming in to that game and playing the way that he did. I think it was a lot to ask of him to come in against Norwich and, you know, play as well as he did. I know he had a poor game against Southampton, but he definitely looked like a leader at the back during the Norwich game. Even with recent performances looking poor from Villa all round, he's definitely a bright spark. I can see him kicking on.
Oh, 100%. He's our Haas in the middle of defense. You know, yeah, that was cringy. I really wish I didn't do that, but whatever. Anyways, let's move on to the Watford game here because I think the theme of this episode is going to be a tale of two really different performances because you go into the Watford game with a little bit more confidence, thinking, okay, you know what? We get a win here. We're going to be probably out of the relegation zone. And to be honest, change in formation, things really didn't change. It looked way too negative in my opinion. And you know what, just from the get-go, it just didn't look like we were really ever in it, Danny.
Okay, so the changes made were Lansbury and Hotter coming in for Trezeguet and El Ghazi, which clearly kind of showed an unconfidence from Dean Smith in his wingers. But also, you know, I at first was thinking, okay, this is a good opportunity for Henry Lansbury. And also for Hotter, who has linked up with Wesley well in the past. But I think soon it was pretty evident that it probably wasn't a good idea having Lansbury and Hourihan going up against Doucouré and Capoue. Probably should have had another defensive midfielder in there with Nakamba. But Grealish out on the wing again. It's almost as though, you know, you take two steps forward, one step back here. It worked against Norwich to some degree. Why are we moving back out wide? I think a lot of fans are getting frustrated now in the fact that there doesn't seem to be a backup plan. It is this or nothing, basically. Yep. Now, you know, you're away from home against Watford. I understand playing in this formation. But I think for me, again, I think a few questions raised over why Gilbert's not playing over El Mohamedi, who has been good in fairness, but you know, when you're leaking goals in the back, you know, you want to try and get a bit more solidity in there. You also look at the fact that we're just, again, just pressed back totally against Norwich, against Watford. And you wonder whether Dean Smith knew what to expect against them. Like, are we studying our opponents? Do we know what they do? Like, Watford are a high-pressing team. Was Lansbury really the player who was cut out for the fight in that game? And I single him out there. Not because he played badly, but because of the fact that he's barely played any games for us. Meanwhile, you know, you've got Kodjo who's on the bench, who really could have, you know, added to our goal-scoring efforts again. And he's the main guy that fans keep going back to when talking about potential changes.
Yeah, it's a really weird one because just right from the get-go, there's a lot of issues. I can't remember the exact players from Watford that were involved, but there's at least 2 to 3 instances within the first 10 minutes where there's mad scrambles in the Villa box. We were struggling to clear it. And to be fair, Villa had their fair amount of opportunities as well. The main one coming, of course, from Wesley's header that Ben Foster made a great save, and you have to give him that. But if you look at that in particular, that was Villa's chance to capitalize. And that was really our only true chance of the game to get ahead, to set our pace and to kind of set the tone. And I wouldn't put that on Wesley because he took his chance and it just didn't happen. You have to put it almost on the midfield because besides with McGinn being out, and I think that proves it, we're so light in the middle. And I forgot to touch it on the Norwich game, but when you look at Nakamba and you look at Louise, you kind of think we don't really have a true holding midfielder.
I think Nakamba does that. I think Nakamba does that well, which is why I was so confused that he wasn't picked for this game in particular against Doucouré and Doucouré and Kapuei.
I don't know. Like, the thing with Nakamba, I do see him almost like in that Conte role, who just kind of runs all over the pitch and takes the ball away and distributes it. And I do see him in that role, but obviously he's not as good as Conte. I think we can all admit that. But I just think we're still missing that physical presence in the midfield, because it just feels so lightweight. And sure. I want to bring this up right now. Where does Douglas Luiz fit into this team?
I don't know, because I don't know if he's playing to his full potential. Like, we've seen him play well at times, right? When he's come on as a defensive mid, or if he's come on, you know, in the same role as, say, McGinn or Hourihan. But, like, for that Watford game, he disappeared a lot of the time. And I didn't even realize he was on the pitch for a lot of that game. You wonder whether he wants to be combating, or whether he wants to be, you know, whether he wants to have that ball at his feet. And it seems to me like Villa have a lot of a similar type of player who only seem to be comfortable when they've got the ball. Mm-hmm. Now, that's an issue when we're not linking up well. And that's an issue when your striker and your wingers are so far away from your midfield. And it's also an issue when you're sitting deep.
Yeah.
And I think, true. You know, when there's pressure applied to them, when there's pressure applied to them, they're brittle and they're going to break. And I think that's the thing with Luiz. He's never been on a team, I don't think, which has been under constant pressure like that. You know, he's been at Man City. He's been playing for Brazil. Yeah, I mean, maybe it's like that in Spain, but it's a very, very different type of football there. You don't see so much of the high press even.
Oh, 100%. I think he's a very tidy player. And obviously, his time at Girona and La Liga, there was a lot of praise for him there. I just don't know if he's up to the physicality. If there's a lot of questions on him. We'll get into his error in a little bit, because I do want to get onto the first Watford goal here. It comes via Troy Deeney, and that comes via a Konsa error. He fails to clear it after having so much time to do so. I believe it was Doucouré with the shot. Tom Heaton makes a great save. And then Troy Deeney has a simple opportunity to tap it in. He just does that simply. And I feel a little hard, or sadness, I guess, for Tom Heaton in that sense, because he was so close to making that next second save, and that would have been one hell of a save to keep that at 0-0. You can't blame it on him there. He's left out to dry. It's a frustrating one, Danny. What were your thoughts on that?
This again is the thing that makes me jealous of other teams around us to some degree, right? Is that, I know that sounds a bit wrong, but Watford really want that ball back. They really want to score. Like, Deeney is absolutely storming at Konsa at this point. And at the same time, you know, they've got two other players around the defenders there surrounding them. You know, they've got a high press going on. It's, no, listen, we're not going to get penned back. You're not going to lift this ball over us. We're winning this back and we're going to score against you. And I think that's the thing here, where Konsa's kind of expecting themselves to have a little bit more time. But again, if we'd just done a little bit of research on Watford, we'd know that this is what they do. And instead of opting for the pass to El Mohamedi, he tries to get rid of it. And yeah, as you say, look, it's simple at that point. It's a 2-1-1 and Watford ease it, basically.
Yeah, and I feel like from that point on, the game just wasn't, it never really was in our favor, but it just from there, the heads dropped, nothing was going right, confidence was absolutely shot. And you get that with teams in this position right now, but you never really see it this early, unless they're like Derby County that one year where they had like literally barely any points, like, and they were just absolutely terrible and got relegated. That's, or even the last time we got relegated, where it was literally November and the heads were down. It's just, it's so reminiscent of that, not as toxic, but just so reminiscent of that mindset. And you look at it going in the second half, you're thinking, okay, let's get this back. I guess we like playing from behind, so we'll see what happens. And a lot of people went for a 1-1 result in terms of prediction for this, so that's fair enough. And you could kind of see that at that point as well. But then the second goal happens. And before that, I should mention the red card by Mariappa, of course. He absolutely takes out Lansbury. It's fair enough to be a second yellow. He goes off.
Can I just say, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. The number of Villa fans on Twitter who at that point are like, game over. We're not winning this. It's not hilarious. It's funny in a way, but...
We're up a man, and we can't capitalize on it. And this is it's a story of the season. You look at the West Ham game. There's a few other results as well in there. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But it's so strange that we should be on the front foot, and we're literally playing on the back foot because tactically it's naive. We're pressing so high up, they can just pick us out. And you look at the second goal that comes shortly after that red card. It's just a simple ball over the top. Troy Deeney's trying to hold it up at the edge of the box, waiting for players to help for support. And Douglas Luiz, I don't know what he's doing. It's just so unnecessary, so unneeded. It can be pent-up frustration, Danny, but in my opinion, it's so poor. What did you think about it?
That to me was, I think, just really insulting. As a fan, I thought that, you know, we're going through such a hard time here, you know, at the club, you know, watching Villa play like this. And you kind of expect Douglas Luiz to, you know, use some sense, because it's not just the one defensive error he's made here. He's made two. He's so focused on Matty Target being on the ground. This isn't the Championship, right? This is, you know, if there's a problem, VAR will probably sort it out, right? But otherwise, Watford have every right to keep playing. They're not putting it out. You know, they're a man down. They need a goal, right? So Douglas Luiz is too busy watching Target on the floor, just watches Deeney breeze past him. By the time he realizes it's too late, you know, he runs back there and brings him down in the area. And there's no need. There's no need. Just hang in there, hope that the opportunity passes him by. But instead, you know, this is, we just hand the game over to Watford, having not pressured them at all ever since they were down to 10 men. And it's just worrying. It's just worrying that, again, we end up having to wait for us to actually switch on. And it's not until we go 3-0 down until, you know, things actually start looking more positive.
Yeah, and I think the best thing about that whole Target controversy, where whether or not they should have kicked it out, you know what? I think Nigel Pearson honestly said it best. Villa had the chance to knock it out, and they didn't, and they played on themselves. And why wouldn't Watford continue on the play with that instance happening? I think fans especially, and Dean Smith, I think I can kind of catch him out on that as well. To be that upset about it, you kind of know you have to play to the whistle. You get taught to play to the whistle when you're like 5 years old. It's just the nature of being, like, it's just the nature of play. I just don't understand that kind of mindset of blaming small things. That's what frustrates me.
It's just a victim complex. It's just a victim complex. It's just where... Poor old Villa, the referee screwed us over. You know, we would have won if it wasn't for him. You know, I'm sorry, but you're a man up. Play like it. And the whole reason that we lost this match, the entire reason, was that Watford wanted it more. Yep, they 100%. Ran more. They ran harder. They wanted to make sure they had the ball, and they wouldn't settle for anything less than it. Whereas we saw a lot of players, I'm sorry, not up for the fight. 100%. Sauntering around the pitch, you know, not pulling their weight, because you've got two arguments here. Either you say the Villa players did pull their weight, in which case, I'm sorry, but if you're losing to a team who's bottom of the table, 3-0 at that point, whilst, you know, they've got a man in hand, whilst you've got a man in hand, even then. You're saying that Villa aren't good enough for the Premier League, and in that case we get relegated. Fine, that's how you feel about Villa, or you believe that, you know, they didn't play to 100% of their ability. And I think I'm part of the latter club here, because I've seen this team do well. I've seen us play well. I've seen us dominate teams and play around with the ball and you know, show energy. This is nothing like the performances we saw earlier in the season.
100%. And I'll just mention that, of course, the third Watford goal was, if you're a FIFA fan, it's basically a sweaty goal. Etienne Capoue just kind of knocks it across the box, and Ismail Assar just, he knocks it in. It's 3-0. Two goals conceded when you're down to 10 men. I think that's the most frustrating thing there. But to kind of get on to your point, Danny, with what you're saying, I think good teams make their own luck. And things do go your way when you're performing well. It's just it's a thing that happens. It's been proven in the past for Villa. It's been proven in the past for other teams. And we're not making our luck. We're not even making opportunities to get forward and be progressive. And that's what, I'm not blaming this on Dean Smith in the sense that that's what he was brought in and what was expected, that this attacking style. I just think it's kind of a culture shock for him in particular. I think he's been found out extremely easily. And I think finally, I'm hoping he's starting to realize that he's been found out himself. And I think my biggest fear with that, and I'm not saying Dean Smith out, I think all that stuff is just a pile of absolute rubbish and just shouldn't be discussed.
But he needs to change though. But he needs to change.
Yeah. But what changes? Like, it's a personnel thing too. I think we brought so many players in, and a lot of people easily compared us to Fulham. We touched on that in the summer podcast and building up to the season. And it's an easy cop out. And you know what? We're so much different than Fulham. We had to buy players. We lost so many players that out of contract. They were old. That kind of gets us out of that in that sense. My only issue with the players we brought in is that I almost feel like we didn't bring the right players in for the system. It was more, we were looking for the profile of young, talented players, and I hate to say it, with a better resale value. Now, that's a good outlet for a club like Villa, but at the same time, I almost wonder if we would have went a few different ways and would have went with a few more Dean Smith signings, where we'd be now, because there's a few linked, it's easy to link with Brentford players because, of course, that's where he came from. But I almost wonder if we would have went more his direction where we'd be right now, because I think honestly we'd be a bit more competitive.
Yeah, if we had if we signed your Malpies and whatnot. I do hear that argument, but also, you know, I think hopefully we learn from that in January, and I hope we do bring in some better players. But I don't think that talent's an issue with any of these guys at all. I just think, again, you know, you're trying to put too much together. You're really trying hard to put too much together and get this team playing. And it took Dean Smith a while with the mishmash of players that we had last season, right? And I'm not surprised that it would be taking him a while now. But things aren't improving. They're getting worse, which that's my problem here. Because we're not playing any better than we were earlier in the season. If we continued playing like we had at the start of the season, we'd be getting results. Or if we'd made better choices, like, you know, consolidating games when, you know, teams are down to 10 men, making better substitution choices. What we're seeing right now, in my opinion, is a total loss of morale and players not pulling their weight because of it. And that all comes down to mentality. I think they believe they're weak, so they're playing as though they're weak. And what they need is a shot of confidence. With that being said, I know Burnley's coming up, but that cup game against Fulham next weekend needs to be one of those games where Villa, you know, score a bunch of goals and get back on the front foot again, because this team is just lacking belief. And I think that's the key thing here. That coupled with Dean Smith needing to learn from his errors.
100%. We'll move on to the previews here in a moment, Danny. But before we do that, I would like your match ball, please.
Oh, God. I mean, this is difficult because I think there were a lot of poor performances all around. This is tough. I'm going to give my match ball to Jack Grealish because he seemed like the only guy that cared on the pitch. I mean, him and Tom Heaton. Horse, yeah, to some degree as well, but I'm going to go with Jack Grealish. Yeah, it has to be him. I do think that he could have, you know, eased his frustration a little bit. Maybe if he had a bit of a cooler head on him, Villa wouldn't have, you know, fallen apart in the last 20 minutes, but I don't want to put that on him. We need personalities like that about. So yeah, Jack Grealish for me.
100%. He cares a hell of a lot, and I love to see that. And I don't understand the whole aspect of people disliking or going at him when he shows that passion, because that's what everyone wants. But getting into my match ball here, I'm going to have to, once again, I think maybe this is the first time in Holtcast history, I'm going to give it to Tom Heaton, just because, you know what? He did make a number of great saves again. Although it's a 3-0 loss, he did keep us in certain instances. Well, now we're going to get to the preview portion of this. We'll stop rambling on in typical Holtcast fashion. Get on to the Burnley game, of course. We traveled to Turf Moor on New Year's Day. It's going to be a tough one, of course. Burnley are a physical, strong side. It's not going to be easy. Danny, what's your take on this match? How do you feel about it? How should Villa come at this? Give me all the down low.
Okay, so this will be third Premier League game, I think, in the space of about 6 days even. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's one or the other. But, I think, you know, you look at the kind of games that we've had, like, really physical game against Watford, heading into a really physical game against Burnley. We all know Burnley's reputation. They aren't a side that score a lot of goals. I think that's one thing to say. And they haven't been in great form. I think they lost to Manchester United and they lost to Everton in their last couple of games. So coming off the back of two defeats, albeit against decent sides, this is a team as well which, you know, do concede goals if punished, I'd say. You know, they are generally quite solid, but they have shown at times that, you know, they can fall to pieces. My only issue here is that if Villa, you know, don't play in the right way, if Villa play like they did against Watford and let Burnley have too much of the ball, then there could be serious issues.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I think when you look at this, and I think there's a theme we haven't mentioned throughout this episode especially, is how much we missed Tyrone Mings. I don't know his injury status as of yet. I hope he's back for this one because he's left a gaping hole. I think when I look at Burnley, the biggest issue from a Villa tactical standpoint is their strikers. You look at Woods and Barnes. They're very physical strikers. They like to get in your face. They're not afraid to knock you around. And with how fragile we are, especially from set pieces right now, especially from counterattacks and just generally poor defending overall currently, on a whole team basis, not just defensively, I think players like that are really going to cause us some problems. So you almost hope Dean Smith doesn't put out a Nakamba Douglas Luiz combination, because Danny, I don't think that combination would work in a game like this.
I mean, we played Hourihan, Luiz, and Lansbury the other day, and that didn't work at all. Like, don't we need the solidity of Nakamba back in there?
I think you put Nakamba in there with Grealish back in the middle, and I would probably say Hourihan, to be honest. I think Hourihan plays best when Grealish is in the middle, and I think Grealish plays best, honestly, when he's around Hourihan. Those two, I don't know what it is about them, in my opinion. They just link up brilliantly, and I think that's the midfield I would go with. You might feel a little bit differently. It's kind of a toss up in the middle, because no matter what we're putting out there right now, especially in the midfield, the product just isn't there. And I think with that being said, if we're going to stick to a 4-3-3, this is a game where we have to play our natural out and out wingers, no matter what form they're on. It's another one of those things where I think I've said this week in, week out for the last, I don't know how many weeks, we just need to start playing to our strengths and not putting, square blocks in circular areas. It's not going to work. It never will, and it never has. It's good for a game here or there, but there's no continuity in it. And with our most influential player being out wide on the left-hand side, it limits someone like Grealish's potential to really impact on a game. And I think with that being said, the pressure does fall on him every game to get us out of these ruts, and it just doesn't work when he's out wide.
Yeah, that's true. And I think, you know, this might be a good opportunity for Villa to try something different as well. You know, I think we want Grealish, you know, through the middle, really. And I think if we come at Burnley and we do look to attack them, then I think Villa will score goals. I think the thing with Burnley is that, you know, they are a team who are seriously lacking in attacking confidence right now. I think you look at the kind of strikers they have, though, and they're the exactly the type that can cause trouble and that can cause your defense problems if they're put under too much pressure. If you let Barnes run at you all game, if you let Wood or Rodriguez run at you all game, then you might well concede. So what Villa need to do is keep the ball and be the team in possession we should be. There's no reason why we shouldn't be against Burnley, you know, especially when you look at the type of football that we look to play or tried to play in the Championship or have done earlier on in the season. You know, Burnley have only scored 3 in their last 5 games. So why play like we're afraid that they're going to score? Go out there and grab a couple of goals. I think that's the way to do it. So Grealish through the middle, get him linking up with Wesley, possibly Codger. I would be tempted to stick with Wesley at the moment. But yeah, I think Villa need to do something ever so different.
That's fair enough. I just hope we don't go out there and just sit back and try to absorb pressure, because I think that's been proven for the last few weeks. It doesn't work. But Danny, it's come that time again. What is your score prediction for the match against Burnley?
It's just hard, isn't it? Because if I'm honest, I'm going to go with Burnley 1-0. I'm going to go with Burnley nicking this 1-0. I have no reason to believe that the team's going to play any better than they have done. The only saving grace, I think, is that, as I say, Burnley haven't been scoring goals as of late. But after that diabolical sort of collapse against Watford, especially in the last 20 minutes, I just see this team being shattered mentally. Unfortunately, that's just my inkling. When it comes to these predictions, I try to kind of be as realistic as possible. I'm going to go with Burnley nicking this 1-0. What about you?
That's fair enough. Honestly, there's two different mindsets I look at this. I think it's either 0-0 or 1-1. Either way, I think we're going to come out of the block pretty slow again. It's just, I think we're so scared to go forward because we're going to be hit on the counter. Burnley aren't one of those team that are really full of pace, so they're not going to hit you heavily on the counter as well. So it's going to be a tricky one. I think, of course, with them not scoring many goals, there's not going to be many goals in this. If you're a better, I would not put over 2.5 goals in this game because I cannot see 3 goals going in. You know what? Just to be realistic and a little boring, I think both teams could use a point here. So I'm going to say 0-0.
Yeah, I mean, that's potentially what can happen. Although I do see Villa scoring, potentially. I'm not putting that in my official prediction, but there is a chance that Villa will grab a goal here. I think that all depends on the hunger from the players. It depends on how they're going to respond, because I know on the pitch during the game Villa aren't very good at mustering up a response, but you know, maybe with a few days in training, maybe with a few days to rule their mistakes, maybe they react. That's what we've got to hope for anyway.
Yeah, hope is one thing that I think some of us are starting to run out of at this point of the season, especially. We'll touch on one more game here for the next couple minutes and just kind of go over it quickly, because the games, like I said before, come thick and fast. So next Saturday, of course, January 4th, we travel to Craven Cottage in the third round of the FA Cup to face Fulham. Of course, our history with Fulham, I think the last time we played them, it wasn't too great, of course. It was the Wembley Cup final, and of course, we all know how that went. Of course, they went down, we went back up, so karma kind of went back at them that way. But we go up against a Fulham team that are very inconsistent this year. Of course, still battling for promotion, but they do have a striker we've been heavily linked to so far. I would say lazily coming up to this transfer window, and that being Mitrovic. The man is on absolute fire in the Championship, probably too good for that league, you'd have to say, Danny. How do you feel about this game, and where do you see it going?
I think Fulham probably have they probably have a bit of a feather in their hat, in their cap, don't they? You know, they'll be right up for this game. They're performing well in the Championship at the moment. They are third in the Championship, by the way, and you know they've been banging in goals this season. I think they've scored 40 or so in their 25 games, 39 even. And as you say, Mitrovic has been dangerous. This is a game as well which you probably can't see Villa starting their full first 11. I can't see Dean Smith doing that, because January is going to be a heavy month. There's 7 games in January. if Villa beat Fulham, there'll be another FA Cup fixture in that as well. Now, consider that we've just played Norwich 3 days ago. I was speaking on a Sunday. Played Watford on the 28th. Burnley midweek. Fulham just 3 days after that. There's barely any time for rest in these games. So Villa probably send out, you know, a second 11, but they probably send out a few other players in there. It's a game where Fulham could spring up on Villa. Alternatively, having said that, Dean Smith might look at this as the game to get Wesley's confidence going and get some of the other players' confidences going. So I think it all depends on how Smith views this. I'll ask you this, Cole. With the League Cup so in reach right now, do Villa have to prioritise here and not risk further injury to the main players and perhaps rest a lot? Do you give Jack Grealish a break?
Yeah, that's tough. Any manager is going to tell the press essentially that every game's important. They would never just kind of prioritise and bin a game off per se. I think this is a game that you give Jack Grealish the rest he needs. It's been a heavy couple of weeks, and it's not going to get any easier. You need to rest your key players. And to be honest, I think this is a game that, honestly, it's going to be interesting just based on the perspective that both teams have kind of crucial games coming up here. Fulham are still battling for promotion. They might not deem this as really a priority. And Villa, of course, we of course have the League Cup. That's huge for us right now, and that's a big priority. And then you of course have the survival in the Premier League. That's another major thing as well. So I think for this game, you're going to see massive changes, I would say, on the Villa side for sure. A few on the Fulham side, they might take it a little bit more serious, but I would also like to see this game be a little bit more adventurous. Maybe have Dean Smith try something new, because it's really just a free hit. And, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I don't think it really does anything to the psyche of the players, because it would just be nice to see something different. I know we probably won't, but it would just be great to see some progression in that sense. A little bit of more variety, Danny.
I think what we have to try and find a consensus on here, I think as fans, is something has to change within the next 7 days. I mean, in the next 5 days even. You know, I think whether that is an inkling of a signing, you know, whether it is you know, some hope that Villa are going to bring in new faces, whether it's that or whether Dean Smith says, look, this isn't working, let's try something different. Something has to change in the next, you know, couple of games, because he is going to be under some serious pressure at this point. I don't really want to get into a debate about Smith in, Smith out, because I don't believe there's a debate to be had just yet. But I think you look at the next couple of games, if Villa struggle, and don't, you know, show any sort of intent in January, then yeah, it could be tragic.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one for sure. We'll wrap this podcast up right now, Danny, with we'll do your score prediction for the Fulham game.
Just because we're inconsistent, I'm going to go with a 3-0 win. Also because I want revenge over them.
It's tough. It's really tough, in my opinion. If I just feel like this is such an unimportant game, in my opinion. I'm going to go 2-0 Villa. I just think, it's tough. I'll go 2-0 Villa. We'll keep it there. I don't know where to prioritize this. It's just really a toss-up, because you look at games last year when we're in the championship, and you look at cup games as a way to progress and to kind of get the Villa brand out there again and show how we're progressing, and you want to face different sides, and there's more excitement around that. But now you look at it and you're thinking, well, this is just a cup game. I honestly couldn't be bothered. I have more important things to focus on. And it's just one of those games. It's almost hard to get excited for, because you're so worried about where you are in the league.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I think that is definitely an issue. That is definitely an issue. But having said that, you know, you can only live in the moment. You can only live in the moment. Well, the fact of the matter is that, yeah, we're in a relegation battle, but we're not relegated yet. So we might as well enjoy the cup run whilst we're at it. Let's hope that the League Cup goes well, obviously. But let's get a result against Fulham, and let's see if that, you know, if we can put three or four past them, then it might change things. There's going to be a lot of players there who might well be worried for their future at Villa. January is a big time of year. I think with that said, Cole, I want to know, just before, you know, we finish off the podcast, what's your wish list for January, realistically?
Realistically, oh gosh, you'd have to say another striker. I think that's pretty obvious. Midfielder with McGinn's injury, I think. Nonetheless, we need another central midfielder, just someone who can sit in there and really absorb pressure. I think that'd be another one. And obviously a winger. I think those are three areas that were massively needed. Very inconsistent on kind of the wing standpoint. To be honest, we only have like two true out and out wingers. So your rotation there is already lacking when you're putting someone like Jota up there, because I don't really think he's a natural winger, to be honest. He doesn't have the pace for it. And we see what happens with Grealish. It works for a few games, and then from there on, he just gets isolated and it doesn't work. Danny, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty fair. I think the thing that you have to remember about the Premier League, though, is that you need real quality for it to work. You can't just bring in anybody and hope it works. I mean, look at West Ham with Sebastian Haller, who's barely scoring for them. You know, despite the fact he's a fantastic player by right kind of thing. You've got to get the right guys in. We can't rush it. We can't just snap at somebody just because it seems like something needs to change. We need to make good high quality signings in January. I'm not sure who's available. I'm not sure whether the money is there to do that. But you know, this is why we have a director of football. This is why we have people there to make these decisions for us.
100%. We'll keep our faith in them for sure. Hopefully, Christian Perslow has a few tricks up his sleeve, and you never know. Hopefully, we can bring in a couple players that make an impact, because really, that's what the January transfer window is all about, trying to get those players in that can make that impact. But anyways, we'll wrap this Holtcast up there. Thank you very much to Danny Raza for joining us. Of course, you can find him on Twitter at RazaJourno. You can find me, Cole Pedham, on Twitter at Talk Aston Villa. Of course, all together, we make up the 7500 to Holtcast. Find us at www.7500toholt.com. I probably put too many W's in there. I always do. But anyways, nonetheless, guys, up the Villa.